Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a weekly motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, and specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. This week, we are brought to you by Working Class Customs, which is a custom fabrication shop out of northern Utah. You can direct any further questions on that to Cole.
And I'm Cole.
I'm Easton. We are your two favorite hosts of your favorite weekly motorcycle podcast. Available on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Amazon Podcast, YouTube Music. The list goes on. We're everywhere. Check us out. I guess you already are because you're listening. But give us a follow. You know what I'm saying?
Here we go.
What? It's better than weather.
What are you drinking over there?
It's water.
I mean, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, but good Lord. We're filming a little early today, comparatively speaking.
That's true. It is light in my house. You can actually see the stuff behind me. It is a little early. You mentioned it's cold over there. It's getting cooler over here.
Cooler.
Well, you know, I started wearing a jacket again. Got down into the 50s, and then I got down below the 50s, and that's how it goes. So I'm looking forward to heading to warmer weather to ride some motorcycles again. It's been a hot minute for me, so it'll be nice to get back into it.
When is this happening?
4 weeks from now. Yeah.
4 weeks. Well, I'm doing the opposite. I just signed up for next Sunday.
Okay. All right. Premier track event donation thing.
Yeah. Fundraiser for Air Fence at UMC. Sunday the 21st?
20th.
Sunday the 20th. Come one, come all. There, it's a little more expensive than a regular track day because the funds are all going to Air Fence. The track is cooperating, you know, helping provide the facility so that all the money can go to the Air Fence. They opened up the entire perimeter. Some people really like the perimeter.
Other people don't.
It's fine. It's fine.
I'm definitely one of the people that does like the perimeter. I think it's got the best of both worlds. So after I rode the East track this year, and we should probably save this for after the intro, but we'll get it out now. But after I rode the East this year, I see why you like the East, right? You've been telling me for years now, like, you got to ride the East. We got to get you on the East. And I see why, 100%. Definitely like it better than the West. But there are a couple parts of the West that I miss, which are brought to you by the perimeter. And going down that long straight into turn one on the West that's a good time.
Listen, I threw the old Ride 4 in the PlayStation last night.
Mm-hmm.
Said, let's go do a couple rounds on the perimeter.
Okay, yep.
And currently using an R6 in the video game.
Still.
Pops out at 148 miles an hour. In the video game. I mean, realistically, that can't be real. But the bike tops out at 138. And I can almost go get a snack while I just need to, like, duct tape the go button down and go get a snack while it's headed down the straight.
Just put a rubber band on it and go heat up some corn dogs real quick or something.
Like, wah!
Oh, man.
And the
all
only,
right, well.
The only, before we break into the intro, the last thing I want to say about that is the perimeter's great. It's the perimeter, for people that don't know, is usually thought of as like this, I don't know, this pinnacle thing. If you get to run the perimeter at Utah, that's like, because it doesn't always happen, right? Mm-hmm. They don't, it's not the most popular configuration. Popular is the wrong word there, but the most.
Well, it doesn't get raised.
Yeah, it's not the most often ran. I'm waiting to see if it shows up on the race schedule next year, FYI.
Okay.
For one round. To be honest, I'm just being mad because my intent is to take the Husky out for this event.
Mm, and the Husky will sit on that straight while you go get a snack and you put it.
Yes. Yeah. So
yeah, that's fair.
So that's the only, the other thing is, I don't know, you're always trying to improve. You're always trying to get better, and that will absolutely help. But it's harder, since we don't run it as often, it's harder for me to compare what I'm doing to if I'm where I need to be, if I'm making improvements.
Yeah, I mean, I would look at it more as just an opportunity to go out, you know, raise some money, hang out with friends, family, whatever, and enjoy the perimeter. You should take the brick.
No.
Mm-hmm. You can top it out. Just re-gear it, take the brick, and yeah, it'll be a good time.
I might take a few bikes.
There you go. There you go. Well, if you're looking to, one, help support the cause, two, run the perimeter, and three, see one of the greatest tracks in the United States, and people of old, when they talk about it, are often talking about the perimeter when they mention that, right? Yeah. It is the perimeter that's talked about it being kind of European based and having those sweet. It's got ups and downs, long straight. It's got a lot of everything if you've never been there, right? Cole's ridden all the different portions of it, so he's a little biased. I've ridden the perimeter more than the other two, so I'm a little biased, but go check it out for yourself. You're supporting a great cause, helping so that Utah SBA can continue operating, and it's a rare opportunity. So,
right. And on that note, let's run the intro.
Intro it is.
Yesterday at one point, I was in sixth.
And we're back.
We're back. And we're live.
Alive.
Alive. What are we talking about this week, Cole? We didn't really cover it in the beginning.
Well, we had the great opportunity. I hope everybody enjoyed the podcast last week. It was fun for me. If you haven't listened, go back and listen. But we had the opportunity to bring on a couple amateur racers that I was lucky enough to race with this year, and seeing their perspective. Now, if they're listening, I'll just let you know. I got a lot of comments on the contrasting, the contrasting opinions, especially as it concerns the Red Mist or the way a track day is approached, and even bleeding into some of the podium conversations we had. Is it about the money? Is it about the podium? You know, some of the gratitude, kind of the throwback, and kind of a contrast in just the take on that, like whether you're willing to smash the guy next to you or not to win a race. And had some interesting conversations that came from that. So go back and take a listen to that one if you haven't heard it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely a good episode. With that, I did want to mention, if you have been super successful this year as we're nearing the season's end and you have a story to share, feel free to hit us up on Instagram at JK Moto Podcast. Throw your story out there. Talk yourself up a little bit. And, you know, we want to recognize the club racers around the country. I think that this podcast definitely is centered on or shoots to find the quote-unquote little guy, right? The non-sponsored riders, the guys that are out there like Cole and Lugnut and everyone else that's out there spending their own money to do what we love to do. So we want to hear about it. So hit me up on Instagram. Once again, at JK Moto Podcast. Tell me your story. If you won a championship, or maybe it was your first season, you had some pretty good success, or maybe you didn't, we want to hear about it, and we'll share that on the podcast, give you a good shout-out. Just want to kind of open up that opportunity, because that is what this is geared towards. And I did want to take the chance to thank everyone. Can I make an announcement? Cool.
Hit it.
Sweet. So, as you might know, as I mentioned in the beginning, this podcast does get featured on YouTube, among other channels, and on the YouTube, among other platforms. And on the YouTube platform, we did have a huge breakthrough this past week. Thanks to everyone that is listening and a multitude of other people. We hit 1,000 subscribers, which is huge. Just want to thank everyone, all of our supporters, our listeners, you guys that keep coming back. Have clicked that subscribe button. If you haven't yet, you know, you still have a chance right now. Go click it. But definitely huge thanks to everyone. We're not stopping. We're not going to just end here and call it good. We're going to keep going. So stick with us. Keep riding. Keep racing. And we'll keep providing great entertainment.
Yeah, agreed. Thanks everybody for listening.
So we got a cover. Last week we did talk to two great racers that are not little guys, but our quote unquote the little guy. We do have to kind of cover the non little guy if it were. Is that fair?
That's fair.
All right. I think we should kick it off with.
So we know we're a week late, but we skipped it. We skipped it last week for the podcast that we felt was more important, because I'm going to go out and say it.
Yeah. Okay.
Go for it. I mean, don't shut the show off now, but that was a god awful boring race for MotoGP.
And with that, it's time to end. Thanks for watching.
Well, we said we'd call it out. You know, we get carried away sometimes on here and go, that's the greatest race of all time. You've got to go watch it. Please, if you're thinking about getting into MotoGP, don't go watch the last race as your first taste of MotoGP racing.
Yeah, it was a great kind of like end to the triple header to just settle everything back in, and it felt like everyone was going nuts, and then just calmed down for Japan. It was like, all right, we're just gonna chill out. Yeah, I agree with Cole. I agree with you on that.
So we're in Japan, Motegi. We had Marquez's first visit there without being the super stud, because he's always been a Honda rider, and all the Japanese fans get behind their Honda. I was a little, not to make this about Mark Marquez again, but in case, so I don't forget, one of the interesting things to me is the Japanese fans are always fun to watch. They're colorful people. They bring posters. They dress up in, you know, costumes in the stands. It's always interesting to see. You know, it's a different culture than we're used to.
It is. And not even like not in a bad way either. It's just, it is different. Like almost every other race, you go to the fan section, right? They show the fans, and it's like you got a family that they'll show with the little kids, like, woo, go Pecco or whatever, right? And then you got like the diehard Fabio fans. And they're just wearing like blue shirts and blue, and they get the devil all over them. And then you always have somewhere in the background, you got a random shirtless dude. Every single stand in the world, there's always a random shirtless dude. And he's not rooting for anyone. He's just like there. Not sure what he's doing, but he's there.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yep. And then, you know, you get a, it's not, you know, not to, it is football season. Football is among us or upon us. Like you don't have the, like, you know, home team dudes have freaking Mark Marquez, you know, M on one chest, A R. You don't have that, but there's like every kind of fan section looks pretty much the same. And then you go to Japan, and it is wildly different in a good way. Like, it's kind of cool. They mix it up. I do personally struggle a little bit with the Japanese language reading. Like, I'm like, I gotta really look for the number, because I can't recognize at all what else it says. But anyway.
It's because the posters are all bedazzled with cats on them and stuffed animals. And I'm not talking down. It's awesome. It's great to see those guys, you know, get as excited as they do. But back to the point, Mark Marquez is got a lot of super fans in Japan because he's raced for Honda, because Honda comes out of Japan, because whatever. And this is the first year here he's showing up on a Ducati.
Yeah.
And What did you think about the fans? What did you see? I haven't given you time to think about that, but
I mean, I still remember seeing quite a few Mark Marquez fans, but not. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because Honda is not doing well, and Yamaha is not doing as well, and you're right. A lot of Mark Marquez fans have come up over the years in Japan because he's on a Honda. I wouldn't say the same about Fabio.
Right.
And so, yeah, it was interesting. I think I see what you're getting at. I don't know if I have.
So
didn't give me time to think about it, but.
Yeah. So the Japanese are obviously very proud people. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to me, the sheer number of Ducati shirts, Ducati hats in the stands, without necessarily a rider affiliation, just straight up Ducati, not repping for the home team. And it made me wonder. It just made me wonder how far those Japanese manufacturers have really fallen when their home crowd is rooting for European brands as well.
Yeah.
Food for thought. food for thought.
Yeah, it's a good. It is interesting. I don't know. I'm excited for next year. To be completely honest, I'm not excited, but I am very anxious or curious about 2027 and what we're actually going to see happen. And I think next year and 2026 will give us a little bit of insight into 2027, but I think it's going to be a brand new grid.
So I've noticed all the. Let me swing this back to BMW.
Here we go.
But I have noticed in a lot of the stories, the unfortunate thing about the 27 rule change for me, this is not fact, just speculation and a feeling from the stories that I read, but it was looking like BMW was there next year. And they still may be. But more and more of the stories are saying when BMW gets to MotoGP in 2027. So more and more, I'm thinking that's going to push back those plans.
Yeah.
Because why jump in now when you're going to have to learn something that you just have to change everything anyway? But just a side note. Back to MotoGP.
Back to MotoGP. Can I continue down your side note?
Yep.
I don't know if it makes sense, and I have no idea how much this would cost, but why not jump in now with an 850cc bike? The limit is 1,000. Someone correct me in the comments. I don't know. I haven't read the rule book, but could you build a smaller bike? They're saying it's going to be just as fast anyway. It just won't hit the high top speeds down the straight. But if you come in and you can handle better.
I don't know.
Food for thought. If you're listening, think about it. Let me know down in the comments why I'm stupid or why you agree. But before we get any further, I do think we need to announce our winner for this week's fantasy.
Was it me?
No.
I'm sorry. Running joke. Please continue.
No, it was not. Unfortunately, no one... I don't know if anyone's going to be able to catch him at this point. But our winner, once again, this week, I don't even need a drum roll because everyone knows already, was Triple Three Racing with a whopping 184.5 points. The closest behind him for points this past week was Gas V Racing at 176. And then you have Swindle 31. He's in fifth. Gatsby is in eighth, by the way. Swindle 31 at 160. And everyone else. Oh, no. Sorry. Moto Assini also 162. But everyone else is under 160. So, yeah. But I mean, 184.5. Like, it just stands out at the top. He's in first place, holding it down. Got almost 100 point lead on the second place guy. Triple Three Racing. You're absolutely killing it. You haven't reached out to us on Instagram yet. Please do. Hit us up on Instagram at JK Moto Podcast. We'll get you your weekly prize. And there's only a couple rounds left, everyone. You're running out of time. There are a couple boosts hanging out there. Actually, Gatsby Racing, I'm going to call you out real quick. You're sitting down in eighth, but he has three boosts left and got 176 points last week with no boosts. So less than 10 points behind. No boosts. So
I'm looking at Triple Three Racing, their team right now. And man. Silver Riders. I mean, anybody can look at this, so I can point out his secrets, right?
Yeah.
Fabio Quartararo and Joan Zarco.
Sorry, that's how I feel about those Silver Riders.
Gold Riders. Mark Marquez.
Okay.
And Jorge Martin.
Okay, hang on a second. Let me pull up my team for you real quick. Gold Riders, Jorge Martin, Mark Marquez. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Okay, Silver Riders, Pedro Acosta, okay. Johan Zarco. And give me the constructor and the team.
Ducati is the constructor.
Okay.
Pramac is the team.
There it is.
Because I have 48.5 power points for the constructor and 38.5 for the team. They're making more points off of the constructor and team than they are off the riders.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yep, because I've got Aprilia and Grissini.
And there was a boost in there.
Just all right, yeah, okay. All right, fair enough. Well, I've given up hope. We'll keep announcing, and we will announce our final winner. But I've definitely given up hope for myself. So, but you know, I'm ranked 19,291st in the official league. I wonder if it'll show me where Triple Three Racing is in the leagues he's in.
In the United States League?
Yeah.
Or the official?
Either one.
Because I'm 28,731.
Wow. I feel pretty good now. Thank you. All right. Well, moving on from fantasy, on that note, it was a depressing note. Anyway, yeah, Triple Three Racing, reach out to us. Those of you that have boosts left, it's time to start pulling them, maybe not. I don't know. It's up to you. Whatever. Whatever you want to do. But if you want to win, the prize will be big.
Boost everything.
Yeah. Boosted. Look.
Sorry. Run them if you brung them.
Boosted. But to get into the weekend, there was
weather. There's been more weather this year in all the different series than I can ever remember. In Moto America, in World Superbike, in MotoGP, there's been a lot of weather this year.
Yeah, I'll give you that. What's surprising though is like Japan often has weather, and they definitely had weather this weekend, but not in the main events.
Right, but
it was out in practice and qualifying, and the main events were like, yeah, we're gonna threaten it, but it never actually showed up, which was kind of, you know, made it interesting. I was definitely a sad boy this weekend for a little bit. Not actually like 100%, you know, they it was the correct call, but there was a moment of great excitement on my side of the house, and then a moment of not excited anymore, but understanding.
I was reading through some of the comments on that, and it's a comment that's been said before. I'm sorry, I don't recall who said it, but something to the... It's what I say all the time. Cut the green asphalt back out and plant grass there. If they survive, they survive. If they don't, they don't. I mean,
yeah.
We know the rules are the rules and blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. I get it, but it was dumb because he barely touched it. And it was even at the point where he touched it was, it's like coming out of the corner. You're back up straight. Is not.
Yeah.
There's zero potential of gaining anything.
I think the worst part for me was like, it was right at the end, right? Pulled in, didn't have a chance, realized it got canceled, went back out, didn't have time. And this doesn't, you know, this incident outlines it pretty well. What we're talking about is Mark Marquez went out and set a record-breaking lap, was top of Q1 or Q2 rather, going to do no way anyone could beat it, broke a bunch of records. It was great. It was awesome. Fastest lap we've ever seen there. Cool. Not immediately, but gets canceled a little bit later. Comes out, yeah, his rear tire was definitely, it was on the green, like there's no disputing that, nothing. But that lap was so far ahead that had he not been that, you know, 3 inches over, would it really have shaved? It's kind of like you're saying, right? Like how much did he actually gain at that point by doing that? And he didn't have a chance to kind of follow it up. So,
and the real argument from there though, the real argument from Mark Marquez, which I agree with, was they didn't immediately call it.
Yeah, true.
They showed it on the board. I think there was like 3 minutes left in the session, 3 or 4 minutes left in the session when that happened. But after going to the top of the board, setting the world on fire, he didn't necessarily go push the next two laps.
Yeah.
The way that he maybe could have, if that would have been instant, if that rule would have came through instantly and they would have said, hey, you need another lap, he might have been able to push for a better one. But instead, he went and drove around for two laps. So that was his big beef with it, which I get. They should have.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because you know, to my argument, okay, I was on the green by 3 inches. I can definitely sync that up, and I can still get within, you know, within a couple hundredths of that, which will still be a lap record. Let me go do it. But you didn't give him time, so I don't blame him at all. Rules are rules. That's what it is. That's when it happened. No one's really. I don't think anyone's like super upset about it. I'm not even that upset about it, but I think it sucks to be like, hey, I set this crazy good lap, cool, I broke the rule, but there's no way that he didn't have at least a second place in there, right, based off the other lap times. So to immediately go back down to seventh because you just can't, like, that entire lap is canceled. And anyway, I don't think I disagree with you. Just put the grass out there, mostly because, you know, maybe Mark could be perfectly fine if there was grass out there. I don't know. But that was like maybe the biggest talking point this weekend. And then we came in and we had a sprint, which Mark and Jorge, because Jorge also terrible qualifying session, pretty big wreck near the end there.
Yes.
And ended up 11th on the grid and then came back to salvage some good points in the sprint, hit up fourth place. You know, Marquez came into third, which I think is just another testament to what type of lap he was actually able to do. And then we fast forward to the race and here we have Marquez in third again, but Jorge did even better and came up into second. And that, I think that's kind of where the whole like boringness came from, because both these guys did most of that like very early on. It's that whole first lap, perfect launch scenario. And then the rest of the race was just kind of a race. So
let's touch on this boringness for a second. And I got to bring up World Superbike, and I know we're going to talk about that in a minute. So
yeah,
a lot of times I'm trying to get you to watch more World Superbike.
Correct.
I've been trying to get you to watch more of it. And I know after the fact, when you look at it, you're going to see one guy won and it's going to be like by 8 seconds sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. You don't too often see that in MotoGP. So one could argue that MotoGP racing is closer, right? The fact is, if you watch a World Superbike race, a lot of times the first half of a race is just, you don't know who's going to lead. There's five guys bouncing around. They're banging off of each other. The positions are changing for that entire half of the race. And then it seems like a wreck will happen. Something will happen. Somebody will finally like break the pack and then he'll run away with it. So I challenge everybody. If you watch World Superbike race, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But the competition is there. They had a race this weekend. The top five were five different manufacturers. Five different. There he goes.
Fact checking. BMW, Ducati, Honda, Kawi, Yamaha. All right, you got me. You're right.
Bam.
That is pretty.
How cool is that, right?
Yeah, that's good. There is a 9-second gap between first and second, though.
But that gap didn't come until like the last, I mean, it's a 21 or 22 lap race. And that gap didn't even appear until 11 laps to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, you know, when the rider in second place backs off because, you know, he can't go with it, you know, they've broke him.
Yeah.
It gives a false illusion that race wasn't as close as it was because they're just not taking the risk anymore. They can't win. Yeah. They're backing off. So
I can see that.
But what's the rest of the pile though? Sorry, we're going to get off. We're going to go back to World Superbike in a minute. Back to MotoGP.
Yeah. I mean, back to the boringness. I think just to close up Japan, the big takeaway is, you know, we've talked about Jorge Martin being more mature this season. I'm rooting for Martin and you're rooting for Bagnaia, I believe. Not rooting, but
that's who I think's going to win.
Those were the official predictions as of last week.
Yeah.
Which we're not making any more official predictions from here on out. We've only got a few rounds left, so we'll just leave them where they're at. So team JM on this side and FB on the other side. Team Facebook for Cole. But, you know, Pecco closed the gap this weekend, but Jorge Martin kind of seemed to just take the loss. Yeah, he qualified in 11th. Let me do the best I can do, but let me keep it clean. Which he also doesn't have the best record in Japan anyway. So it wasn't super surprising that he didn't do that great, but I think he did pretty good. There's now only a 10-point gap between them. There's only a 2-point gap between Marquez and Bastianini. So
we got to talk about the man, the myth, the legend, the baby Jesus, the Pedro Acosta.
I forgot about how big of a role he played in that. Yeah.
So Pedro, he's for real. I mean, he is.
Yeah.
We all know that. No argument there. But we had a conversation a while back that said, is if Pedro doesn't come out and win every race, then basically in his rookie year, then he's not as good as Mark Marquez was. And that led to a conversation of what the talent level was at the different stages and this different situation with bikes and aero and all the,
yeah,
you know, the kind of things. But that dude shows again and again and again when he's on, he has the ability to run with anybody. I mean, I think the difference is it would stand out more, but if Pedro was on Team Honda doing exactly what he's doing right now, the world would come out and say how great he is because he's on an inferior bike and he's doing all these things. But I would make the argument that without Pedro, where's KTM?
I agree with you. I don't disagree at all. I felt so bad for Pedro, and I don't mean that in like a, oh yeah, what was him, but this, you know, this weekend, what you're saying is 100% true, and I agree. And what made me think this weekend was you put down a bike, and you know, we've talked before about you don't have to wreck to learn, but at that level, that is a way to learn and look at a certain person who is very famous and maybe holds the biggest wreck record of all time in MotoGP. Maybe he is the baby Marquez. Did he come out and win his championship in his first season? No. Has he won a race yet this year? No. Dang, he was freaking close, and he had it in the making. And I thought it was going to be his weekend, and I was excited for him. I was like, he's going to do it. This is going to be great. And when he's up there fighting, that what I like about Pedro the most is that out of all the rookies that have come through, he's got the attitude that you have to have to be a successful rookie in MotoGP. He'll run with the big dogs. He'll run with anyone. Doesn't matter if I get passed. Like being passed by Mark Marquez is a big deal, and some people take that and they're like, oh, and that's kind of, that's died off a little bit. But you look like a couple years ago, right after Marquez came back from his wreck, if you got passed by Mark, it was like, oh, holy, I'll never recover from this. Pedro doesn't care. There's nothing that can get through his brain, be it Pecco, Jorge Martin, Mark Marquez. You could stick Rossi out there with him. Rossi could undercut him, and he would come right back on top, no problem. That's the attitude he's got.
Yep.
And I saw that, and unfortunately, he put it down this weekend both times. That sucks, but he's learning. And he was ahead of the other two factory KTM riders. So, which Brad Binder gets talked up all the time about how amazing he is. Jack Miller's kind of been on the down for a while. You know, no one's sat here and said that Brad Binder is terrible or anything like that. So,
which Fernandez is it? The other Fernandez?
I don't remember. Augusto.
Augusto. I had high hopes for that guy. Yeah. I did have high hopes for that guy. I thought they weren't giving him enough credit when they started talking about firing him on day one and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, he hasn't had any big DG Antonio flash, you know, at the end of the year. He hasn't done anything to prove to anybody that he should be there.
Yeah. Well, and the interesting part with that, the only like saving grace I might give him, which I don't actually mean it towards him, but KTM has declined throughout the year.
It sure feels like it.
Now, whether or not that's actually KTM declining, I don't think so. But I think, once again, my theory is that Ducati has the best well-rounded bike. And every single manufacturer and every single team is constantly improving the bike, you know, round to round, even session to session. Sometimes even halfway through the session, right? They're always making little improvements. But if you show up with the most rounded package, there's less improvements you have to make throughout the weekend. And right. So I think that there are tracks that KTM is better suited for. There's tracks that Aprilia is better suited for. There used to be tracks that Yamaha was better suited for. Ducati has the most well-rounded package, and they've got it so well-rounded now that it just shadows everyone out.
Did you see the replays they kept showing of Jack Miller's rear tire going through that one corner, bouncing off the ground?
No, I didn't.
They kept showing a replay. On multiple laps, they kept going back to it and showing how much the rear tire was bouncing and moving around. Mm-hmm. The whole bike is flexing. I mean, it looked like somebody had taken the shock out of the back of his bike. It was, I mean, the whole bike's twisting, the tire's moving. I don't know how the hell they're riding it. And apparently the chatter problem is something they've been dealing with all year. They were saying they had made a step, but from them pictures, that doesn't look like a step to me.
Yeah.
It was pretty scary. I wouldn't want to ride it.
I think I remember what you're talking about. Not maybe not as prominent, but yeah. I don't know. I just that's my take is that maybe because Ducati's better, maybe because whatever it throughout the season, you know, DG had this great come through. It could have been his team making great adjustments and him finally getting used to that bike. It could have been Ducati as a whole made some big breakthrough and gave it to the, you know, every single rider, every single bike, whatever. KTM hasn't had that. And I think we've seen that because I will give Brad Binder credit. He's a pretty good rider. I'll give Jack Miller credit. He's got the skill in certain areas. You know, we talk all the time. He can hop on anything, be good. No one from KTM has really been up there as much. Like, it's been questionable whether or not they make it straight to Q2, which was not true at the beginning of the season, and it wasn't true last year. So that's the only, like, saving grace I'd give Augusto, but I've never been an Augusto fan, so whatever.
He's a nice boy. I like him, but
okay.
That's why I rooted for him. Is he seems like a deserving, good, hardworking, whatever, but it's just not working for him. Be interesting to see what happens to him next year.
Yeah.
He's out of that paddock. We'll see where he ends up if he does. Maybe I'll watch him on the more exciting racing over at the World Superbike side.
There you go. There you go. Well, anyway, that's going to wrap up MotoGP, I think, for this week. Not a whole lot to talk about. And we understand we're a week late, so we don't want to dwell on it. But there are four rounds left. I got another triple header from Australia, Thailand, and Malaysia. Then we'll take a quick two-week break and end the year in Valencia. So I am sniffing out another to-the-end championship, which is great. I do like that. It keeps it exciting all the way through. I don't know who's paying those guys to keep wrecking the bikes to make it that way, but keep it up. I'm all about it. So transferring from there, we do need to cover World Superbike, and then we do have some new motorcycle news to cover. So you're waiting to hear about that and our thoughts on it, stick around.
World Superbike. We're almost to the end of World Superbike. Obviously, I've been alluding to it this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, the racing is so exciting over there. But the cameramen, they know that if Jorge Martin is leading by 5 seconds, that they can go ahead and show you some of the other racers too. I think that's maybe a difference. They go down the field. Okay. They'll show that fourth, fifth, sixth fight. They'll show that seventh, eighth, ninth fight when that's the best fight on the track.
Mm-hmm.
And the storylines over there, you have factory teams, of course, just like you do in MotoGP, right? You have factory teams and you have satellite teams, but you never know who's, well, you do. Top Rack's going to win. Top Rack's going to win everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But probably. Even that, in race two today, I just watched it this morning before doing this, okay? Race two, they come out, Top Rack's in second. He starts second, middle of the front row. Mm-hmm. He gets blown all the way back to fifth by the second corner.
Okay.
Third corner, he's in fourth. Fifth corner, he's in third. By the end of that lap, he moves up into second. You come on, and then he's back in third again. They're just changing, and they're trying to decide, you know, everybody has their different strategies, same as MotoGP, right? You got a lot of different tires out there. You got a lot of different scenarios.
Yeah. But
you got Yamaha's that corner better in a lot of places, like the old days in MotoGP.
Yeah.
You got Yamaha's that are just super fast through the corners and then they're getting blown down on the straight.
Mm-hmm.
But there's more flavors out there too. I mean, you have
Kawasaki's in the mix.
Hondas and Honda. So we know Honda does well in Moto America.
Yeah,
true. So far, yep. Won some championships. Well, World Superbike, they've been, pardon my French, but dog shit for years.
Yeah.
But they are making the last four races. They have been up in the top, let's say eight. You know, they've been fighting. They put a bike on the podium this week. The Hondas are fighting week in, week out, and they're all the HRC factory colors, you know, for the Honda fanboys. I mean, that's exciting watching them, and they don't have – the Hondas don't have the same power deficiencies that Yamaha and Kawasaki are struggling with. It's just – it's exciting, and it's interesting to watch because you have a top rack that destroys everybody on a BMW, but – you should just probably take him out of the equation and say, where's BMW at, for example? They're always fighting in that top 10.
Yeah.
Garrett Gerloff, our boy, he's put it on the podium a couple times this year.
Mm-hmm.
But you never know who's going to win. Petrucci had a weekend where he won, you know, three races on a weekend.
You never know who's going to take second. Unless Top Rack goes out on injury, then it's like, whoa, who is it going to be?
But even this week in the Super Bowl race, you know, the whole structure's a little bit different. They go out, do their qualifying, they race their first race, you know, have a podium celebration, enjoy, whatever, and then they do what's called Super Bowl race. And where you finish in the Super Bowl race, at least the top nine are decided by that. So you had Top Rack on pole for the first race, but he took second in the Super Bowl race, which made him start middle of the front row for the final race.
Which I do. That's such a cool difference, and I don't know that I want MotoGP to do it, but like it's a different strategy, right? Because the sprint in MotoGP is worth less points. So if you've been it to win it, well, you didn't lose out on that much, and you still get to start in first tomorrow. But it changes a lot when you say, hey, wherever you finish today is your starting point tomorrow.
Yeah, and the only real negative I see is it's really unfortunate when somebody maybe gets a pole and has a mechanical during the Super Pole race.
Yeah, or, you know, Alex Marquez tries to stick his front wheel in your rear tire, whatever it might be. I mean,
stuff you can't control, it ends up screwing you up for the other race. But overall, I like that. I don't want MotoGP to change either. I enjoy that they're both different enough that new storylines to follow because I like to watch both.
Yeah, it gives us something to talk about on this podcast every week.
But your good friend Beluga, the Beluga whale.
The Beluga whale.
He came in the weekend with down 39 points. He finished second in the first race to Top Rack.
Mm-hmm.
Moving Top Rack to, I believe, 44 points up. Then we went into the Super Pole race. And that finish was the closest in the history of World Superbike.
Okay.
The Beluga Well caught back up to Top Rack, sat on the back of him, and sniped him for the win going across the line. It was a drag race. You find it?
Yeah. Hang on.
Their handlebars were touching.
Okay. Super Pole results.
Race. Super Pole race.
Not Super Pole.
They have a Super Pole, which is their qualifier.
Okay. Got it. Cool. Thanks. Yeah, there we go. Gee, holy cow. Yeah, I was looking at the Super Pole. It was like 0.082. I was like, that's not... It's close. Don't get me wrong. That's close. If you see 0.0 something, that's very close. But 0.003.
Oh, yeah. They were holding hands across the line.
Yeah. That's not a... You ever like taking a stopwatch and you like try and boop, right as fast as you can, hit the start stop as fast as you can? I think I've gotten down to like 0.07. 0.0...
You need to
0.03. That's not real.
So it was awesome to watch. Top Rack said... So he ran a harder tire for those first two races than everybody else, and it took him a minute for the bike to come to him because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Super Pole race, which is shorter, he said the tire hadn't fully come on yet. He should have went with maybe a soft. He didn't think he could make it through with a softer tire. But he said coming onto that last, he spun it up. Mm-hmm. Didn't get the drive he wanted, but it was a cool picture. It was fun to watch live. It was a drag race coming out of that last corner.
Yeah, that's awesome. 0.003. That's whew.
So then we go into race three, or the second race. It's like a full length race, and it wasn't as one sided as it looks by any means. It was a dogfight for like the top five for half the race. Buliga worked his way up into second. He had a bad start, worked his way up into second, made a run at Top Rack for a while there. But Batista, the two-time reigning champion.
Yeah.
You want to talk about team orders. That made that race exciting because Batista was he's an arrogant dude, like most racers. You kind of have to be to some extent. Batista, I'm sure it was painful for him because he was obviously faster than Buliga. Buliga about killed himself a couple times trying to keep up with Top Rack. Kind of got in his head a little bit, and then we watched Batista sit on his back tire. It was fairly obvious he could have passed him.
Yeah.
He didn't have any pressure from behind. He sat back there. So we have one round left in World Superbike. Top Rack has to not lose more than 9 points to Buliga in the first race, and he'll have the championship secured. Pretty dominating, pretty impressive year, especially considering he had that very scary crash. Yeah.
I mean, pretty dominating, I guess it's... Yeah, okay. Sorry, I'm just trying to go back, and I mean, it didn't feel like it started out that way.
No, it didn't. I remember having conversations on here saying, will Top Rack win? And I said, he'll win at least once. Yeah. I remember saying that. He'll win at least one race.
I'm just looking back, right? Round one, no Top Rack except for the Super Pole in third. Round two, one race one, one Super Pole, third race two. Round three, second in the race, one. Not on the podium for Super Pole. First in race two. And then we start to just hit Top Rack, Top Rack, Top Rack, Top Rack, Top Rack, Top Rack, Top Rack. It's just him for the next one, two, three, four rounds. And then he's nowhere to be found because he got injured. Nowhere to be found again because he got injured. And then he's back second, second, second. And now he's back first, second, first. So pretty, I mean, when I look back and I'm just, you know, World Superbike's kind of cool for this because you can see all of that on one page on their website. And it is impressive seeing his numbers, but yeah, it's just I didn't have any like hold against him, but just because you take a guy and put him on a bike that we think is better, but we didn't have any proof of it. No one was out there doing amazing things on the BMW, so I guess it's true. BMW is great, but Top Rack's also a pretty good rider.
So shout out to the Pipe Dreams podcast. They had Ben Spies on their show recently, and one of the segments he talked a lot about Top Rack as it compares to his own career, and he said in his opinion Top Rack may be the greatest rider maybe ever, right? But definitely in the sport today. But
yep.
He said that in no way, shape, or form means that he could get on a MotoGP bike and ride it. And he compared that to his own career and the way he rides. Ben Spies said he was always much better on a World Superbike stage because he had some years in MotoGP.
Mm-hmm.
Successful in MotoGP. But he said the bike, the way you ride it, is just different and it doesn't lend itself to Top Rack. He said Top Rack should just enjoy his years in World Superbike and continue being the greatest rider of World Superbike history.
Yeah, it's... interesting point, and I don't think I disagree with it per se. I don't follow World Superbike, so it's easy for me to say that, you know, well, yeah, you don't get as much look, which is, I mean, it's true. Even from you look outside, once again, you know, we've had conversations before about how I can mention the name Valentino Rossi and people recognize it, but that's really about it. No one going to know even the top three in World Superbike, let alone anyone further down.
Not in our country.
There's no chance over here. Now, yeah, you get outside of America where people actually care. I'm sure that changes quite a bit, but interesting. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So maybe BMW will build a bike he can actually ride for MotoGP.
So my understanding is there's a new M series coming for next year for World Superbike.
Interesting. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. But I think that's a perfect segue into the new bike announcement that the world got this week.
We haven't talked about this before, so I have a guess, but I'm not sure which one. Hit us.
Hit me with your guess. I'm curious what your guess is.
Is it Japanese?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Is it blue?
Yeah, it's blue and white and black and light blue.
All right. Let's have it. What do you got to say?
The Yamaha R9.
Oh, boy.
Soon we'll get the R8 and the R5 and the R2 and the R1. Wait, we already had the R1. The R0.
The R0. What That's do you actually, think about it? What are the give us the details. What is this thing?
All right, the Yamaha R9. So we're coming in at a great price of $12,499 MSRP. It doesn't come out until 2025, which is basically right now. 890 cc's. It's an MT-09 engine, so it is essentially just a big boy R7. R7 was the MT-07. R9 is the MT-09. It's a CP3, so inline 3 engine. I don't have the horsepower number on freaking Yamaha's website, but it's like just over 100. I think 109. Let me double check that. I'll pull up better specs for you. Sorry. Thought Yamaha would have had that available.
So an MT-09 with fairings.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I haven't actually watched any of the reviews yet because I just didn't want to.
It's a good looking bike.
It's interesting.
I'm treating it kind of like an electric car, though. This is let me put this disclaimer out there.
Mm-hmm.
The bike's probably awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Great in so many ways, but for me, an electric car just signifies the change of an era, potentially. And when I see these bikes coming out, no matter how cool they are or can be, it's just kind of depressing to me because it's a change of an era.
Yeah. So my first thoughts, the wings, interesting, kind of seem pointless. Like they're just like, oh, we have to have wings on a bike now. Otherwise no one would like it. They're definitely put on in a very Yamaha sort of way. And they're definitely part of the bike, which I appreciate. It's not just like, okay, we slapped some wings on the side. Like all the Ducatis that have come out for street use, they come off as like, yeah, we need some wings on here. Let's just glue them on. Aprilia's first model with wings was like that. Their second model was a little better. Honda was pretty good with their first model. Their second one got a little weirder. Yamaha, I think, with their first like official, here's some wings on your bike. It's very like integrated, looks like it belongs, and it doesn't stick out from the front view. Or even the side, like you have to hit it at the right angle to see it. The weird part to me was the rear seat, like the passenger seat area. So this bike, what bummed me out about it was that it really is just, okay, we took the R7, made it a little bigger. That's it. It's no different. The exact same front end, exact same tank shape. Supposedly, it's got a brand new chassis, swing arm, all that stuff. Is it specifically made for it? It's supposed to be all this great. Got it.
Hold on.
Uh-huh.
I just got to be the voice of reason here. One would argue that isn't that true with all of them? I mean, in any lineup, I mean, it's not just because of the new generations, if you will. I mean, an R1 looked like it was from the same family as an R6. Looked like it was from the same family as an R3, ZX10, ZX6.
No, yeah, 100%. But R1, R6, R3 all look the same. R7 comes out, looks the same. R9 comes out, looks the same. We should have, with the R7, maybe started something a little bit different. We didn't. Cool. Now we have another chance. R9. Nope. We've been the same for plenty long. It's not a bad look. I like it.
I want him to look like an alien KTM bug or something.
That's a problem. I don't know. But I just like to see it come out and be like, oh, it's just an R7 with some wings on the back and this weirdly ugly freaking passenger seat on the back of it. Sorry, wings on the front. I don't know. It was interesting to me. Sorry, I mentioned a horsepower number before. Cycle News has to be announced, and Yamaha doesn't have it on their website at all, so I guess they're not actually putting it out, even though I swear I saw it somewhere earlier this week, right around where the R6 was, but with an 890cc engine, so you get the more controllable torque and all of that great jazz.
What does an MT-09 have?
That's a great question. I mean, it's going to be...
It'll be more, probably, but...
More than that. MT-09. Oh, horsepower. Oh, yeah. MT-09 has 117 at 10,000 RPM. So, interesting. 65 foot-pounds of torque. Cycle Gear has this thing making 6,800 foot-pounds at 7,000. So, the nice thing about it, as far as like keeping up with the times, is we are a ride-by-wire system. So full electronic, it comes with the auto blipper up and down, and it's supposed to have some pretty unique and unique for Yamaha electronics package. They ditched cheap brakes and went with a Brembo system, albeit a cheaper Brembo system, but still a Brembo system nonetheless. So they essentially, yeah, how do they put this? Here we go. Advanced electronic suite, advanced six-axis interior measurement unit, is based on the proven performance of the flagship R1. Data collected from IMU with wheel speed sensors enable a high-tech suite of rider aids, including 9-mode traction control system, 3-mode slide control system, 3-mode lift control system, anti-wheelie, and a brake control system. And levels of intervention can be adjusted to preference, and each of the systems can also be turned off, providing the ultimate versatility and control and variety of weather and surface conditions. So their electronics package definitely got upgraded. I think it was like my biggest downfall with the R7 is the R7 is very bare bones. The R9, more power, a little bit bigger, a little bit heavier, but not like a lot. Very manageable because it's that sweet kind of low-end torque. It doesn't bite you at the top. And what I will give Yamaha credit for absolutely is their price point. Right? Because they're bringing in a bigger, better R7 with full electronics. We got quick shifter up and down. You got all this super adjustable everything that every other bike has. No, it's not a liter bike. No, it's not making liter bike power, but we're giving you a very handleable bike with all the electronics you could want. This should be the future of motorcycles, basically, which they are the first one to kind of introduce something that is the future, actually. I don't like the future, but it is the future, and they're offering that at under $13,000. That's the price of an Aprilia RS660. So I'll give Yamaha that credit 100%. They're coming out with affordable bikes, and they might be paving the way to the future that we're going to see here in a couple of years. Do I like it? No, 100% not. Bring back the liter bike. We need it.
Hear, hear.
You, our listeners, are getting soft, and you got to stop. We keep preaching that we got to have small bikes to make it fast, and the manufacturers are listening because everyone else is listening, going out and buying freaking R3s. And here we are, no more R1. We get an R9 instead that's slow and makes less power than a 600. What happened? What happened to the world? Anyway, that's my soapbox. I'll get off it, but I think it looks good. I think it is very competitive for the price. I imagine it'll be a super fun bike to ride. I wish there would have been a little bit different style change, a little bit more. And I'm not a huge fan of dropping down all the bikes and relinquishing the era that we are slowly losing. But it'll be interesting to see what the other manufacturers do over the next coming years, especially with MotoGP announcing 850 and Yamaha coming out with this, which I imagine it'll sell like crazy. Like people are going to buy they're going to buy the crap out of that. At that price, for what it offers, it's going to be nuts.
I was just looking at an R7 for comparison to $91.99 MSRP starting at.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if they revamp the R7 with electronics and can maintain the price, I think Yamaha will have some of the most competitive bikes on the market for sales. Not necessarily for racetrack competitiveness, but for sales 100%. The only weird part is this being an inline three, 890cc, who do I race?
I don't know.
Can't race a twin.
I don't know.
Can't race under 600.
That's a whole nother discussion.
I've got 100 less horsepower. So words of thought for you guys to think on, and where do you think the future will go? Let us know down in the comments. I want to know what your guys' thoughts are, because is this the start of the future, or is it just a useless bike if you're trying to club race? And with that, I think it's time to end.
Fair enough. I think that's
right, well,
I have some things to think about now.
There you go. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next week with MotoGP in Australia and World Superbike finishing up their last round in, what, Thailand, I believe?
Jerez.
MotoGP's in Thailand after, yeah. Anyway, I got confused. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you guys next week.
Yep, thanks for listening.